these conversations with DC are just, I don't even know what to do. We got to come up with some sort of format, David. We get David Lightman from McClatchy, DC. I saw that the Senate did a little Votorama last night on the budget, and I don't really understand. It feels like we don't always get a budget, right? But I mean, I guess we do. I feel like there've been years we didn't even get a budget. But what happened? I thought the budget would they have to have the same one. I thought it was a house. Can you explain to people what is going on as it relates to the federal budget?
All right, let's see if I can do this without boring everybody to death. The way the budget law works is Congress first has to create a shell. In other words, set general parameters for what can be spent. So the first step, and this is what they voted on last night or this morning, the first step is you pass this shell that says you can have X amount for agriculture, X amount for health, X amount for whatever. Then the appropriations committees meet all summer, all spring, summer, and fall, and fill in the blanks. In other words, they say, okay, we have, whatever, $12 billion for agriculture, so we'll spend X on farm subsidies and that kind of thing. Then they have to pass 12 different bills, each one with a different theme, transportation, agriculture, and that's the final budget. But what the Senate did last night, or this morning, it's 4 in the morning, what the Senate did is create its own version of this general budget, of these parameters. The House, though, doesn't like this. They want a budget that includes room for the big tax cut. The Senate says, we'll do the tax cut later. So you have this impasse. So what did all this mean? What it meant was, frankly, politics. Republicans said, look, here's our budget. This is where we're going to cut lots and lots of money. We'll give you the specifics later. The Democrats offered amendments, right, like 60-some amendments. You can see campaign ads now, you know, that they won't cut Medicaid the way the Republicans want. They won't cut money for firefighters, that sort of thing. What does all this mean? It means that you and I are still going to be talking about all this come October, November, December. And by the way, to confuse you further, the government runs out of money March 14th. This has nothing to do with that. That's a whole separate problem.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, and I thought that Trump has been clear, he wants one bill that includes the tax cuts, correct?
Right, that's right. The Senate went ahead anyway, and there's two theories what's going on there. One is to assert their own independence from Trump to show, look, you know, we're not just beholden to him. The other is it's a backup plan. Whether the House can get that huge bill Trump wants is highly questionable. I mean, they only have a two-vote margin right now, so one flip and that's it. Hmm. So at least this thing will be waiting if the House wants to take it up. And it wouldn't shock me if they do.
You know, so far, it seems that even if there's some, I mean, forget about this, like Murkowski, Susan Collins stuff. I mean, I'm so done with that. I'm just done with it. But I, you know, Republicans asserting independence a little bit or trying to from the president hasn't really come to anything so far. I mean, he's basically gotten everything he's wanted. Right. I was with Murkowski and Collins. I was talking about the Cash Patel vote for FBI. But the Ukraine stuff feels a little different. And I'm curious, how does the White House explain this stark? And then we knew that he wasn't a fan of Zelensky. We know he's kind of a fan of Putin. That's not news. But to sort of put the war on the shoulders of Ukraine was stunning to a lot of people, you know. How does the White House explain away these comments?
They don't. In fact, Republican outrage is starting to grow yesterday. You look on the Senate floor and some of Trump's staunchest allies were criticizing him for this. I mean, the irony is Republicans always like to present themselves as the party of strength, the party that cares deeply about the Pentagon, the anti-communist party, et cetera, et cetera. And all of a sudden, you have this. So far, the White House has not said a lot to counter what they're saying. In other words, their feeling is that you're just pouring money into this endless war, that it can be stopped, that Putin's ready to deal. They, I think, see this as akin to stopping the war in Afghanistan a few years ago, or even Vietnam in the 1970s. You know, enough already. Call a truce. Let's move on. But the idea that somehow you're criticizing or demonizing Zelensky is not going over well, not even with Republicans.
So what do you think's going to happen? I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's not a fair question, but I think that Trump wants to be the guy who claims he made peace so badly, he'll kind of feels like he'll do just about anything.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the question. I mean, are there seasoned diplomats who will somehow calm all this down? I mean, I'm not old enough to remember what happened in Korea when Eisenhower got elected and said, you know, I'll end the Korean War, and he did with the truce that still holds today. But you had serious diplomats in charge. Here, I mean, Rubio is respected. There is faith in Rubio as Secretary of State. But, again, we don't know. I mean, that's the great mystery right now, that the question everybody's asking, where is all of this headed? Is this just a honeymoon period for him that, you know, 3 months from now it'll all fade and we'll be back to the usual Washington bickering? Or is this the new norm? We just don't know.
We're talking with David Lightman from McClatchy, D.C. Go to McClatchyDC.com to read all of their content. And, you know, I've been trying to follow, you know, what, you know, Murphy and Blumenthal are doing. And I think we talked about this a little bit last week. It seems like that Murphy is very conscious about carving out a particular lane here. And it hasn't, I don't think it's necessarily resonated too well. I mean, I guess he responded to a tweet about Lara Trump from a fake account that really was kind of embarrassing. But I'm trying to analyze this from 30,000 feet. Is he trying to survive here and carve out this lane because of something like in 2028? Or is it just him following his heart?
You know, it's hard to get, I can't get inside his head, but look, any senator his age, he's what, 50 maybe, if that, is seen as a potential presidential candidate. If not in 2028, then, you know, forever. And they often see themselves that way as well. Is he setting the groundwork for something bigger? I don't know, but is he trying to be a leading voice in the party? Yeah, I give him that. It reminds me a lot of Chris Dodd back in the 1980, 81, 82. Dodd was elected for the first time to the Senate at the same time as Ronald Reagan. And we forget how radical Reagan seemed it when he came into office. Remember, he was going to eliminate dozens of agencies. He was going to, you know, provoke El Salvador. He was going to fight communism everywhere. I mean, it was a radical change. And Dodd was one of the two Democrats elected that year to the Senate, two new Democrats. And, boy, he was talking about tilting at windmills for the first couple months. But he knew where he stood. He knew what the people of Connecticut elected him to do. And you know the rest. And I think Murphy's in that same league, if you will.
You know, when it comes to, I don't know, I'll make a list. Panama Canal, Greenland, Canada, even taking over the U.S. Postal Service. Like, what should listeners look at as something that actually might be plausible?
To me, this whole foreign policy, again, the idea that somehow we're trying to have this alliance all of a sudden with Russia has all kinds of potential consequences. Demonizing Zelensky, questioning NATO, that to me is the bigger, broader 30,000-foot concern. As far as spending cuts, tax cuts, and so forth, I think there's going to be an awful lot of rhetoric, and yes, there are going to be changes, but I want to see how this plays out. I've seen this before, maybe not quite so vocal, if you will. I don't, you know, nobody's tried mass layoffs like this, but I want to see what happens as this goes through the process. I mean, I want to see what happens when Republican members of Congress go home and try to explain why, you know, people have to wait in long lines at national parks or can't get through on the phone to Social Security. Let's see where that goes.
Yeah, let's see. David, have a great weekend. We so appreciate the insight.
Oh, absolutely. I look forward to talking to you next week.
All right. The great David Lightman joining us here on Bryan & Company.